4:55 on Wednesday, November 18th. Okay, well, we'll start. Any questions to begin with? Gotten out of the habit of asking. Just make sure. So today we're going to definitely finish up this chapter on multimedia and quality of service, so that next time we can start on security. And so that gives us one lecture on security Friday, one on security on Monday. So I think we'll leave the security off of the exam. Remember the final midterm number three will be the week after break, because that's the only kind of time we're allowed to do it. We can't do it the next week. And the deal is that you get the option of taking the final exam or not to replace your lowest score on the three other exams. Okay, that's how it has to be if we're going to have an exam at all, and that's the way that you can have a replacement. So I think that's the fairest thing to do. So we won't do the security, we'll just do up through what we do today. And some question.
When is that exam on the week after Thanksgiving?
Pardon?
What day is the exam on the
week? On Wednesday. Yeah, we'll do it on Wednesday. Wednesday after Thanksgiving. Yes.
Second?
That sounds right. 30th, 1-2, yes. December 2nd. Wednesday, December 2nd. We'll do a review on Monday, in addition to going on with the security stuff that we start on Friday. Okay, so that means, I guess, that you're off the hook about the security stuff if you decide not to take the final exam. So it goes. All right. So we'll see how well I do today. I'm not feeling very well, but I think I'll make it. Do what I can. So, where are we? We're talking about quality of service, and we're talking about the mechanisms sort of inside the network that are associated with quality of service, as opposed to the mechanisms in the end systems that we talked about primarily last time. And we made the observation that if you say that you want some level of service from the network and then you don't perform your end of the bargain, if you don't offer the traffic according to the parameters that you've promised, the network shouldn't be obliged to deliver to you what it promised, right? So if I say I want to send it a 100 packets a second, and then I show up and send 200 packets a second, well, the network shouldn't be obliged to deliver all 200 packets according to the promises it made about 100 packets. It doesn't seem right, and in fact it can't possibly work. If everybody did that, things would be broken. So to address that issue, people came up with something not so very long ago that is called policing. And a lot of thought has gone into this over the years. People, if you think about what traffic looks like, right, it has kind of an average rate. So measured over a certain period of time, the average arrival rate was something or other, That's one characteristic. And the network certainly cares about that, right? That if somebody's going too fast for the average they specified, something needs to be done about it. The important thing to realize about an average rate is that you have to specify it over an interval, right? Because if you look at a short enough interval, even one packet exceeds any rate that you might specify, right? If it's lower than the actual link rate on which you're sending, if the specified average, say, is 100 packets per second, and I can send a packet in a thousandth of a second, then I've exceeded my average rate right then and there. And it turns out that since traffic has some natural variability in it, you don't really expect that it will go always at the average rate, but rather that over some longer interval, you'll be expected to meet the average rate. Okay. The next characteristic that is of interest is the peak rate, right? How fast are you allowed, suppose you have more than one packet to send at a time, how fast are you allowed to send them, right? It may be faster than the average. If I go faster than the average for a little while, then slow down, I could still meet my average over the longer interval. So packets per minute? That's a very strange, unit to choose for that. I don't quite know why they did that. Okay, and then the final thing is how big a burst are you allowed to send sort of at full line speed? Okay, so, or rather, probably at the peak rate would be a better way to put it. So you're allowed to go at the peak rate, but only for a limited amount of time. Okay, so those things are the critical measures that traffic is typically described by. And when you buy internet service for a commercial operation as opposed to a home operation, you're often asked to specify these things, and they calculate the charges accordingly. And if you don't realize what you're doing, you can break your internet service. So when I was at Xerox, we had to do one of these agreements, and back then, you know, it was very expensive to get anything faster than 1 megabit a second. But we negotiated a pretty good deal with the internet service provider and with the phone company to connect us to the internet service provider. And we didn't, we knew what we negotiated, but we didn't actually implement correctly what I'm about to show you in terms of traffic policing on our side. And the result was that the traffic policers on their side threw away a lot of our traffic because we were exceeding what we had negotiated. And this was kind of painful for the people who were trying to use the service, because under certain conditions we'd be exceeding what we contracted for and they would just be throwing it on the floor. And then we wondered why. And it took some investigation to figure out our mistake. Live and learn. Okay, so the mechanism that is used to do policing according to these parameters is this thing called a token bucket, or sometimes a leaky bucket, or a leaky token bucket. And the idea is that we have it's kind of like an analogy with water. So let's think of this as water for the time being. We have a bucket with a certain capacity, and we have a hose that feeds into it at a certain rate. And we have a valve here that will take things out at the same rate that they get put in. Okay. So we have stuff coming in, we have stuff coming out, but we only take it out if either there's something waiting to use it. So each packet uses up a certain amount of water in the bucket, say. So we remove a certain amount of water, match it up with a packet, and send the packet. If there's no water in the bucket, the packet can't go. Okay? Similarly, if the bucket gets full, it overflows, and the water coming in is wasted. Okay? So that's the scheme. We translate that then from water to talking about tokens. And you say we put in a certain number of tokens per second. You can take them out at the same rate, and you can take them out as fast as you want. As long as there are packets coming by here. I said that wrong. So let's say that again. If there's something in the bucket and there's a packet waiting to go, I can take that token and send the packet. All right? So what does this mean? It means that on average, how fast can I send packets? The same rate that the tokens come into the bucket. And how big a burst can I send? Well, it depends on how full the bucket is. So the bucket enforces the long-term average, and if I've been going slow and letting tokens accumulate in the bucket, the size of the bucket determines how big a burst I can send, ever. Right? And in different situations, I'll be able to send smaller bursts than that to maintain the long-term average. But the most I can ever send is the size of the bucket in a single burst. Okay, you can cascade these things to sort of do fancier shaping. So suppose that the network here, I had a long-term average of a certain amount, and I also had to slow it down for the burst. Well, I could use another token bucket with a different rate and a smaller bucket size to do the bursting. I could put a faster rate after it, and so on and so forth. Okay? So that leaky bucket or token bucket mechanism is widely implemented in routers and network interfaces that connect into services that you have to pay for. Okay. For an Ethernet, typically you don't do that, right? You're not paying individually for the Ethernet. You just want to go as fast as you can. Nobody cares about that. So that's the main thing that's used. It turns out that if you have a desire to partition your line, this line, into different bandwidth pieces. So we have a pipe that has a certain overall bandwidth, and I want to divide it up into two pieces, say. I can use the leaky bucket idea for each of the pieces separately, and with different rates coming in to each of them, and then serve them according to the, we talked about weighted fare queuing, right, which is like round robin but with different rates for different people, sort of fare sharing. We can do fare sharing on the output queues of some leaky buckets and get fare sharing between different flows on the same outgoing pipe. What else? Oh, there was something else I wanted to say about that. Well, skips my mind. Okay, so those, there's kind of a break here between this slide and the next one. This is the mechanisms. The question is, how does this get turned into policy in the internet? What are the standardized protocols that use mechanisms like this, and what are the policies that go along with them? So there are two different approaches to this, so-called differentiated services, which often go by the name of DiffServe. People don't like to pronounce the whole thing. And this is the one where we talk about having different classes of service, labeling the packets with labels at the point where they enter the network, and then handling them according to their class while they're inside the network. That's this one. The other one is called integrated services. Also goes by the name of IntServe, and we'll talk about that later. So the important thing here is to understand the difference between DiffServe and IntServe. The idea with DiffServe is that we're going to make the inside, we're going to continue the internet tradition of making the inside of the network as simple as possible. Okay? So what we do is we relegate the complexity to the border of the network by saying that as traffic comes into the network, we're going to put a label on it at the edge. And then we're going to treat it inside the network according to the label. We touched on this last time. And the kinds of labels will be things like, not platinum, gold, and silver, I shouldn't have pointed that, will be sort of high priority traffic, traffic that's not supposed to be dropped under any circumstances, unless it's competing with other traffic in the same class, you know, things like that. So, complexity at the edges, simplicity inside, and the DiffServe standard itself doesn't say what the service is supposed to be. It's really just a set of mechanisms that would let you do this if you got around to defining the service classes, and we'll talk about that. Okay. So, at the edges, which is this spot here, we have labeling of the packets. We're going to label them. Boy, the colors here are horrible. Horrible yellow or kind of horrible red. Depending on what flow they belong to is one possibility. There are lots of different possibilities here. The mechanism doesn't care how you label them. It just says you have to label them. So possibilities are label them according to what kind of flow they belong to, based on some negotiation that the edge router has had with the host that's sending early on. or we might label them as being within the contracted service or outside the contracted service. So that's the example that's shown here. The edge router is running a leaky bucket. Now, as a policer, a leaky bucket says if it's in profile, that is, there's a matching token, I'll label it with one color. If it's out of profile, there's no matching token in the bucket, I'll label it with a different color. Okay. So you can label them any way you want to. Question is, what's useful? And then in the interior routers, based on what you see in the label and based on what you see and what sort of policies you have, you can treat the differently labeled packets differently. So if a in-profile packet arrives and finds a full queue, say, then maybe an out-of-profile packet that's already in the queue gets dropped rather than the in-profile one. Okay. Well, this just reiterates what we just talked about. So how do the packets get marked? Remember, there's an 8-bit field in the IP header that was supposed to be used for type of service, and sort of classical internet didn't use it. This was the place that DiffServe tried to populate with some interesting semantics. Okay. So the label is actually uses 6 of those bits. That's nice. 6 bits is what, 64 different classes that you could label with DiffServe. And the other 192 classes are unused and can be used for something other than DiffServe, like InfServe, for example. So trying not to use up all of the available code points. And really, if you think about it, 64 different classes is a lot. Because what do you have to do with a class? You have to say, relative to all the other classes, how should it be treated? So the more classes you have, the bigger your policy space is. See what I mean? It's a kind of an n squared problem, that if you double the number of classes, you quadruple the number of policy decisions that you have to work out before the system will ever work. So my guess is that as we'll see in the following slides, there are possibly 64 different classes, the proposed mechanisms that are being talked about now use a lot fewer than that, because it just becomes impossible to work out what all the relationships should be. Okay, these slides use the term PHB. It stands for per hop behavior. Because remember, think about it, this is just a label on a packet. The packet arrives at a router. The router looks at this and says, okay, what does that mean? Well, that router only has any effect on the next hop. That's what a router does. So the value it finds here determines how it's going to handle queue overflow issues, how it's going to handle scheduling issues, and all that stuff. Furthermore, notice that the way it gets handled is entirely up to that router. Nobody dictates what it means to have a particular number in these bits. And that router is going to have to be handling sort of all the traffic coming in to, right? It's funneling a bunch of input into a single output. It's got to work out based on all the DSCP values it's seeing in the input, what sort of scheduling it's going to use on the output. Maybe different, a completely different problem than the next router downstream may have for this flow. So that brings us to, we did that. It's out of order. Okay, this is just a further description of per hop behavior, how it could vary, who gets to go first, percentages of outgoing links, so on and so forth. Okay, so forth. But the point that I want to make is that if you don't standardize this stuff, the per hop behaviors, it's all pretty meaningless. And DiffServe doesn't standardize the behaviors. And it's hard to standardize the behaviors because, in a useful way, because what does the client really care about? Right? The client cares about, I want to send at this rate and have it delivered at that same rate. And the per hop behaviors don't really address that issue. They just say some packets are going to get better service than other ones do. So we're almost back to best effort service. It's maybe a little improved, but it's very hard to design the applications to use a service like this. And we'll see later, after we do this next little bit, sort of what the state of this is. So, what if instead of DiffServe, class-based stuff, we really want to try to provide end-to-end quality of service? What do we have to do? Well, first of all, we have to recognize that we can't deliver something we don't have. If he wants a megabit and he wants a megabit and we've got 1.5 megabits available somewhere along the path, it's not going to happen. Okay? So an essential part of actually achieving guaranteed quality of service is something called admission control. They've called it call admission here just because they're thinking of it as phone calls. But overall, it's flow admission, right? Can the network support this additional flow that's being requested of it? And it's hard because notice that this bottleneck link could be anywhere in the network. It's not just at the point where somebody shows up at the edge router and says, I want to make a 1 megabit per second call. No, we have to go through the whole process of figuring out the path that's going to take, figure out what the limits are on that path, and say, can every link in that path support 1 megabit per second? The other thing that we have to keep in mind here, and the book doesn't really talk, the slides don't talk about it, I think the book does a little bit, is that, remember, this is the internet. All the packets in a flow don't necessarily follow the same path in the network. Right? So when a network like the internet is saying I can handle an additional megabit per second, say, that's only kind of a guess, because maybe the call won't continue to go over the same path over the duration of the call. So that's a challenge. In an ATM network, which is, remember ATM, asynchronous transfer mode, which we only touched on briefly, it's a connection-oriented network. When you have a connection-oriented network, the path is established at the time you make the connection. You can know everything about it for the duration of the call. So anyway, but it has the problem that it doesn't recover gracefully from a broken link in the middle of the call the way the internet would. Right? Anyway, that's that. Okay, so the protocol that is associated with this kind of QoS setup is called RSVP. It stands for Reservation Protocol, RSVP. Okay. Could be used for multicast. Basically just defines, once again, the information that needs to be conveyed from a sender or a receiver to the network to tell the network what it is it wants to do. RSVP doesn't define what the network is supposed to do in response to those messages. It just defines what the participants in a conversation are supposed to say and how the network can reply to them. So again, it's kind of edge focused, right? More than interior focused. And this is probably the thing that bugs the telephony folks who are really interested in and really know how to manage the inside of the network about the internet. The IETF guys really don't want to deal with what's going on inside the network. Let people figure it out is their attitude. Okay, so here's INTSERV. To pull off INTSERV, we have to do resource reservation inside the routers along the whole path. We have to admit or deny new flow setups. And in order to do that, we have within RSVP the idea of a request specification, which says what quality of service we want the network to provide, and a traffic specification, which says what is the traffic that we're going to provide. So the traffic specification is the thing that matches the leaky bucket idea. It says here's my average rate, here's my bucket size, and so forth. And then we use RSVP to convey that into the network. The cool thing is, and this is definitely a computer science 555 sort of topic rather than a 455 topic, you can prove that with leaky bucket specifications and policing, you can, first of all, the first thing that you can prove is that at each router there is a bounded delay for traffic in every flow. So that's one thing that you can prove. And the other thing is, if you've got that, then you can paste the routers together into a path and have a bounded delay end-to-end. Well, that's very nice for things like telephony, where we've said that we don't want to let the delay exceed, what, 400 milliseconds, I think. And we really prefer it be considerably less than that. But it brings with it, see, all this stuff about you have to put fancy, complicated stuff throughout the network. And worse, all of the organizational entities that own all of those different routers along the path have to somehow agree on what everything means. And they have to pay each other for it. So, I'm just going to skip that. Did they not do... Oh, they don't have a summary here. Well, okay. So they didn't do a... He didn't do a summary slide. So the bottom line is that you can't today easily get diffserv or intserv service in the internet. Individual providers may use some of these techniques to improve the operation of their own networks. Right? They may ensure that customers in different neighborhoods get equitable service in the face of sort of longer pathways to that neighborhood, which we've seen longer pathways tend to break the TCP fair sharing behavior, right? So you can use some of these techniques sort of internally to the network to counterbalance that. But they don't sell you differentiated services usually. And they don't sell you integrated services. There's an interesting little section of the book that's worth taking a look at. The observation made there is that because the internet is generally over-provisioned anyway, it's hard to sell these things because customers who pay extra for diffserv improvements or intserv improvements probably don't actually see any benefit relative to the best effort internet, because the best effort internet is over-provisioned. So that makes it hard to make the investments. If the customers don't see a benefit, they won't pay extra, then it's hard for the providers to make the investments they need to support the complexity inside the network and support the legal and financial infrastructure it takes to negotiate with all of your neighbors about how you're going to pay each other for the traffic. The prioritized traffic. So it's just kind of floating along there. We seem stuck with best effort as the general model. And it works. Well, how does it work for you? Pretty well, right? For web browsing, it works pretty well. If you do voice over IP or Skype with video, it's a little bit hit or miss, at least for me, at my house. WSU here does policing on individual parts of the campus to keep parts of the campus from sort of dominating the exterior traffic, tries to do some sharing amongst them, but it's all hidden. It's not something that we sort of actively participate in, but rather just a network management activity to keep things from getting too bad for anybody. Or another way to put it is to keep it fair, I guess, would be the thing I would say. Okay, well, this is the end of this chapter. What's important? Understand the difference between diffserv and intserv. Understand the classifications of different kinds of multimedia algorithms. Multimedia applications. Understand the characteristics of that quality of service means. You know, things like bandwidth and drop rate and peak rates and all that stuff. And the techniques that are used to provide best effort service, provide quality of service over a best effort underlying service. And it's always kind of shaky. It's like living on Jell-O. That's mostly what I want you to get out of this. So, I thought what we would do is take the remainder of the time today, as remember, we're going to do a fourth project, and it's your choice about the project. I'm also thinking that maybe we can get some more interesting projects if at least some people want to work together with somebody else. You could do a sort of more substantial project that way. If there's somebody that you work with well, don't sort of go out of your way to work with somebody not knowing whether you can work with them at this stage. But I thought it would be interesting to do a little brainstorming about maybe some applications that network applications or network infrastructure or demonstrations or something that people might want to do. So that I have no problem with multiple people or multiple groups even doing the same project for this. And so you shouldn't fear sharing your great idea. Nobody's going to steal it. They just may also do it, and we'll have additional insight into how, you know, into what that problem entails. So let me get up here a new window, and again say view page, and let me list down a couple of things that I've had as ideas, and then we'll see what you have as ideas. Okay, so ideas that I have had have tended along the lines of demo applets. Now, you don't necessarily have to do it as an applet at this stage. If you just want to work out sort of what it would take to do one of these things as an applet, I can give it as a project next time to somebody to turn it into an applet. But so one idea was the convergence of TCP on fair sharing. Remember this diagram that said it would tend to do that. Okay, so an applet to illustrate that. Another one is, I didn't look to see, but I'm sure there are potential things to do having to do with leaky bucket applets. Okay, that's another thought. And I've had one suggestion already about a project that involves a secure chat system based on encryption libraries that are available in .NET. That was one. So what else do people think? What else would be interesting to you? Yes?
File sharing application,
like peer-to-peer. A peer-to-peer file share. So that's number four. Peer-to-peer file sharing What else? You gotta have some ideas. You sat through a whole semester of this stuff.
Maybe like the SMTP application of some sort.
SMTP?
Like mail, yes.
A mail? So how different from other SM? Well, I mean, who cares, right? Just doesn't have to be different. Learn how to do a mail server or a mail client.
It doesn't have to follow SMTP exactly.
Well, it might be more interesting if it did, because then it could interact with existing services, but. Yeah.
Maybe add a filter to the proxy server for content to try to.
Okay. Yes. Good point. Use the proxy server to filter content. So filter out ads, pop-ups. There's actually. One of those that I use that you might want to look at if you're interested in that, and it's called Proxometron. Proxometron does something similar to that, and it's no longer being developed. A lot of it, that kind of functionality, is now built into browsers anyway. But it's still a fun exercise to sort of see what you see in HTTP. That indicates pop-ups, ads, other stuff you want to get rid of, and figure out what it is that you have to do to replace that and still have a working web page. Yeah. Maybe. I want to talk with somebody about that one. The issue being that you can build an HTTP server in about four lines of code using libraries. So, what?
Without
using libraries? Well, maybe. I'd like to talk with you about it if that's what you want to do. You or anybody else. It's certainly an idea. And again, your proxy server is a somewhat good start on that. Another idea, which is, yes. Okay, so there's a community out there working on something called dark nets that use encryption and strange IP addressing to basically hide the whole network from the world. Okay, now I'm not suggesting that you necessarily want to implement one of these, but if you wanted to do a write-up on what they're all about and what they mean for security, financial integrity of the world, and stuff like that, that would be interesting to me. If you wanted to do that, I would encourage somebody who wanted to do a non-programming project along those lines. So it doesn't necessarily have to be a programming project. Another one, sort of along the lines of P2P file sharing, is something called distributed hash tables. This is the idea. You know what a hash table is, right? You feed in a key, it gives you an address in the array, and that's the place you look to see if maybe the thing you're looking for is there or not. A distributed hash table is similar, except that the hashing is actually giving you the address of a machine on which you're going to look to see if the item is there. Can be a very robust approach to doing distributed storage. So again, it would involve some reading, and the implementation is of the basic idea is not terribly difficult. Yes?
YouTube video downloader. I download video from YouTube.
A video downloader? Okay.
Uploader.
Oh, yes, uploader. Since they YouTube just announced the ability, let's see, how did this work? They just announced the ability for people to implement their own space for people to upload to, as opposed to the sort of public space. So things like news organizations can sign up or use the code for this service and have people upload videos to them that they might want to use in news stories. I just saw this yesterday, so I don't know a whole lot about what they're achieving here, but it sounded kind of interesting, and having different applications for doing video uploading might be of interest. So, yeah, media server. Go ahead and implement RTSP, RTP sorts of things. Maybe point to point, maybe multicast. All possibilities. Okay, so those are just some ideas. That's not an exhaustive list. If you have other ideas, something comes to you over break, give it some thought, and we'll get you signed up for what you're going to do right after break. Yeah. Okay, thanks. We actually ended up going over here.